Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 23rd, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. I'm coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Well, I still wanted to mention that cold that's been going around, and it's already into April, so people may have stopped getting it, but it really was amazing how much it spread like wildfire. I just want to remind people that you're going to feel terrible for about 3 days, and then you're going to have a convalescent phase, and the convalescent phase is something to pay attention to. Don't just jump into the intensity of your life. Get extra rest, because I jumped into a work week the week after I had it, and I was very tired by the end of the week. So you want to get extra rest, you want to drink lots of extra water, and even after you're acutely sick, you're still going to have a lot of residual mucus. You're not contagious anymore, but you're still going to have a lot of residual mucus, and it seems like it takes multiple days, a week or more, for the rest of the mucus to clear. But you're not contagious, and you can mostly go back to doing what you like to do. But pay attention to that mucus, because if you don't, you can get a superimposed infection. So it's important to do things, the kinds of herbs that you're going to use. You may or may not want to do immune supportive herbs, but what you really want to do is herbs that help you to release and clear mucus. So you're talking about things that are drying, like ginger and cayenne and horseradish. Those will tend to dry you out. Things that are hydrating, and you know, that like lemon and lime tend to clear mucus, and stuff that thins mucus, for example, is NAC, N-acetylcysteine, is a great mucus thinner. It happens to be a great antiviral as well. And guaifenesin. So guaifenesin is extract of guaiacum bark, so it's a natural substance. You can get guaifenesin at the drugstore. That's what Mucinex is. And you can get that brand, and you can get any brand. Your drugstore probably has its own brand. And with guaifenesin, you generally don't want to take more than 2,400 milligrams in a day, because you'll get nauseous if you do. Otherwise, it seems to be very benign. I've never gotten an upset stomach from it. And I also don't seem to need more than 400 to 600 milligrams in a day. If you get it from the drugstore, make sure to get plain guaifenesin, with nothing added on. No DM, no decongestant, just plain guaifenesin. It'll thin the mucus for you without drying you out and giving you major side effects. And the other terrific mucolytic to have with all of this stuff is this rare and precious substance, which I will show you now. Here you go. If you're looking at Facebook Live, you see a big tall glass of water with a few cubes of ice in it. The ice is obviously optional. The temperature of the water is up to you. Some people prefer cold, and like me, some people prefer warm or hot, and some people prefer tepid. It really is fine. So drinking lots of clear fluids is going to help. So water with electrolytes, water with a pinch of sea salt in it, water with fruit in it, seltzer water is fine, herbal tea is great. If you do caffeinated beverages, over-caffeinating can dry you out a bit. It's controversial as to whether caffeine is actually a diuretic. What caffeine actually does is it relaxes sphincters, so it makes you feel like you have to go to the bathroom more readily. So if your bladder isn't completely full, you're going to have the urge to go sooner than if you didn't drink caffeine. If you drink a big cup of coffee, then you're going to have this combination of the relaxed bladder muscles along with the large quantity of fluid, and then you're going to have to go to the bathroom a lot. But it's not technically a diuretic. A diuretic is defined as something that works in the kidneys to cause you to release more fluid than you absorb. So it's different than it's not technically a diuretic. Although you do urinate more. So just because something makes you urinate more doesn't make it a diuretic. Interesting, huh? I never thought of it quite that way, but that's what we understand. The caffeine is not necessarily a diuretic. Coffee and tea are not diuretics. They do increase urine volume, but not because they're diuretics. It's because of the sphincter situation and the liquid situation. I will demonstrate ingesting water. Here it is. One of the things is I was trying not to ingest the water too quickly, because before I got on here, I brushed my teeth. And after I brushed my teeth, I applied some calcium hydroxyapatite probiotic toothpaste as a leave-on to help to remineralize my teeth and provide good probiotics and antimicrobials for my dental hygiene. Be respectful of that convalescent phase. Know that you're going to have that mucus for a while. And if you get the cold, don't feel like you failed. I think this is one that people's bodies haven't seen. We haven't gotten a lot of colds since the pandemic. Ron and I didn't get a cold after the pandemic until 4 years out. So I had a cold with a bronchitis in early 2020 before the pandemic was declared, although COVID-19 existed. And then I didn't get a cold again until last February of 24. And then it took me until March of 25 to get another cold. And this cold was a doozy. And it may be because, like I said, we spent 4 years not getting cold, so our immune systems are not used to it. So people really got knocked back for a good 3 days over that cold. Try not to eat too much sugar. Try not to eat too much dairy. Remember, dairy increases mucus, whether you're allergic to it or not. Lots of clear fluids, lots of rest. I do find I was extra tired, and I found that doing gentle exercise, gentle yoga, was really helpful. So gentle exercise for you may or may not be yoga. It might be Qigong. It might be going for a gentle walk. I wouldn't jump into high-intensity interval training the first week after you're sick. But gentle exercise is a good idea. It will make you feel better. And I find that the gentle yoga is good. Walking is good. Getting on the bike but not pushing myself real hard was also good. Anyway, that'll get circulation moving and get your mucus flowing as well. But do expect to cough and sneeze a little bit more and cough stuff up and have your ears be a little bit plugged. And that's going to take a little while to go. All right, so that's what's going on with that. So Ron just got over the cold. He's still releasing a lot of the mucus. He's a week behind me. Well, the next time I talk to you, I will have been to Chicago for my stepson's wedding. So that's exciting. So we'll talk to you about what it was like to be in Chicago, because I haven't been to Chicago. I haven't spent time in Chicago since 1991. So, I mean, I've been in the airport, you know, I've been in O'Hare and or Midway, but I have not been in Chicago, walked around in Chicago since 1991. So it'll be neat to see it. I don't have a lot of memory of it, except that I remember going to a great Indian restaurant with my friends and taking a bike ride around Lake Michigan. There was a path around Lake Michigan that we could ride our bikes, and I had my bike packed on the car to go because I was moving to Oregon. So I rode with my friends. It was David Seitz, and he was with Danielle at the time, and that was lovely. So apparently there's a bookstore not too far from where my stepson lives, and it's a great big bookstore akin to Powell Books in Portland, Oregon. But I don't know the name of it, so we'll let you know what that is, and I will probably explore it and, you know, go to the cafe and find a bunch of books and be very excited about it, because bookstores are fun. Bookstores and libraries are just great because they have paper books that you can hold in your hands, and then you can sit and read them and have wonderful adventures while reading the book, and it's a great thing to do to calm your nervous system. So I recommend reading as one of the things to do, and reading a paper book as opposed to looking at a screen. Right now I've got three screens in front of me. I've got the one tablet that's doing my Facebook Live. I've got one tablet for my outline, and I've got my laptop that's recording the show. Too many screens. That's why I find it really nourishing to black out. So like when I'm doing Shavasana in yoga, when I'm lying down, I put something over my eyes to black me out. And then when I'm sleeping, when I'm in my bed, I put stuffed toys in front of my eyes to block out any of the extra light from the window. Even though we live in the woods, there's still a bit of light pollution because there are lights at the airport and there are lights in Windham. And we live in sight of Mansfield Hollow Lake. And so that's a flat spot away from the woods, and light gets transmitted, and there are big lights at the airport. So yes, we have a little airport. Windham Airport is not too far from where we live, so it's kind of interesting. Okay, so here's what I wanted to talk about today. I wanted to talk for a minute about food dyes, because states there's a movement to ban food dyes, and it's gaining ground across the U.S. And this article is very interesting. It has a rainbow cake picture of a layer cake that's all the colors of the rainbow with yummy white frosting in between. So across the U.S., there's been a longtime push to ban synthetic dyes in food, and now it's gaining momentum. And the state of West Virginia has cited the Make America Healthy Again movement, which is led by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who's the Health and Human Services Secretary. And that's a driving force. There's also concerns among parents that sometimes scientists that dyes might contribute to behavioral problems in kids. And the Food and Drug Administration says it's monitoring it, but it's not established. So say what you will about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., I'm not going to give an opinion whether or not he ought to be the Health and Human Services Secretary. I am going to say that banning toxic food dyes is a good idea, no matter who thought of it, okay? As if I'm a naturopathic physician, somebody comes in with a child with ADHD, we're going to talk to them about doing some version of the Feingold diet, which is a diet with no artificial preservatives, colors, flavors, because those preservatives and colors and flavorings can have neurotoxic effects. So anyway, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and New York, the state of New York, have introduced nearly 40 bills cracking down on artificial dyes and other food additives. And that's this year in 2025. The Environmental Working Group is talking about this too, which is a food safety advocacy group. And Brandon Canwood, who's an advocate for eliminating food dyes with his wife Whitney, they created a documentary called To Die For, D-Y-E. Which is a documentary, and it was cited by the West Virginia lawmakers. Oklahoma, Utah, Tennessee have bills on the table. Florida, New York, Texas, and Arizona, all the states all over the place are popping up. So what's interesting is everything's a red state except New York. And New York has a very large blue population, and yet they are one of the states that are looking at it. Now, if you're wondering about Connecticut, if you're wondering about New England, every New England state, except for, it's not every New England state. It's Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island all have proposals for banning food dyes on the table. Maine and New Hampshire do not, for whatever reason. And along the eastern seaboard, it's not Maine nor New Hampshire, nor New Jersey and Delaware. That's a little disappointing because New Jersey has its share of, it's known for having its share of pollution because of the top of the turnpike where all those oil refineries are. And Delaware also has oil. It's very interesting because both New Jersey and Delaware have oil refineries. I mean, there are places on the highway where you can drive by and it's pretty polluted and you can smell it in the air. I have primal memories driving up and down the turnpike, you know, to go visit New York and coming back and forth from New York to visit family. And the top of the turnpike, it's scary looking. It looks like an industrial, a little bit of a nightmare because there are these towers and I used to have bad dreams about them. There are these towers, these big steel towers. And at the top of the tower, there's fire coming out. And that always scared me. And it doesn't smell good there either. You know, so when you go through Linden and Rahway and Elizabeth, there's these refineries there. And then there's the Linden Cogeneration Plant, which is a big power generating plant. I'm not sure what fuel they use. I'm not sure if it's coal or some kind of oil, but there's definitely oil refineries up there. And there's a lot of pollution going into the air. So it's interesting to me that New Jersey and Delaware both have a lot, you know, they have oil refineries. They are not among the states that have synthetic dye ban proposals. Weird. They should. So synthetic dyes are commonly used in products that are marketed to children, like candy, breakfast cereals, soda, because they have bright, vibrant hues and they're eye-catching. So earlier this year in West Virginia, they passed a bill banning 7 of the dyes, including red number 40 and green number 3. And that is set to take effect in 2028 if signed into law by the state. So we have 4 more years before they're even going to be banned. The bill follows a similar move from California last year that banned 6 dyes from food served in public schools. So specifically in public schools, which is a great idea because if the kids are eating more natural food in schools, I think it was the movie Super Size Me, which was produced by Morgan Spurlock, may he rest in peace. I remember very specifically, he showed pictures of, he showed footage of schools that had very healthy lunches that were all natural, lots of fruits and vegetables, clean protein, just things that I've been telling you to eat for years, and said that the rates of violence and acting out and behavioral problems in those schools is much lower than schools that don't have such programs. So when kids don't eat preservatives and dyes and things and eat whole foods, they behave better. Shocking, right? Okay. So Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, has a push to eliminate these artificial dyes. And there hasn't been much of a grassroots movement, and that shifted this election cycle. Said Gerald Mann, who's an adjunct professor of nutrition at Harvard at the Chan School of Public Health, and he's also a former FDA senior advisor and former deputy undersecretary for food safety at Agriculture Department. He thinks that MAHA, Make America Healthy Again, has a big role in this. So it's by no means a new movement. The FDA started looking at steps to look into a link behind dyes and behavioral problems in kids in the 1970s, a California allergist and pediatrician proposed a possible connection, and they investigated further in a 2007 study that was published in The Lancet, where it showed that artificial dyes resulted in hyperactivity in children. In 2011 and 19, the FDA also reviewed data, but determined no causal relationship could be established for children who haven't already been diagnosed with behavioral disorders. Scientists and physicians have called for more research on the topic. The FDA didn't respond for requests for comment and said it has reviewed and will continue to examine the effects of color additives on children's behavior. The FDA hasn't made the connection. It hasn't stopped government officials and outside groups from insisting there is one or alleviated parental concerns. And it's important. It really is important. They said in West Virginia. So West Virginia State Delegate Evan Worrell said that they really need to change the school food, which I think makes sense. We have behavioral problems in the school systems, and he thinks that food dyes are a contributing factor. So RFK, who oversees the FDA, also has previously claimed dyes are linked to hyperactivity and learning disorders and cited a 2021 report from the California Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. They reviewed 27 trials in children and concluded that food dyes can interfere with normal behavior in some kids. He's vowing to eliminate artificial dyes from the nation's food supply, telling executives from major food companies in a closed-door meeting this month that he wants them all gone by the end of his term. Wow! That's amazing. So that's by 2028, according to an HHS official. It's always funny to hear HHS because it's Health and Human Services. I went to Hightstown High School, same initials. That's kind of fun. So when I see HHS, I automatically think of my high school. Hightstown Rams are the best. And this is funny because I'm wearing a UConn shirt with a Husky on it. So go Huskies. Yay. So it's not clear whether he'll have the money or resources to do it. And because the Trump administration is trying to decrease spending across the entire government. Other dyes that are permitted by the FDA include red number 40, which is used in cereals, gelatins, and puddings. Yellow number 5, used in snacks, condiments, baked goods, and yogurt. And green number 3, which is used in ice cream, sherbet, and drink mixes. The FDA's slow efforts to take action on artificial dyes for states and local groups to step up, as stated by Marion Nestle, who's a professor emerita of nutrition food studies at Public at NYU. So state lawmakers show that other countries like those in Europe where food dyes are more heavily regulated. I'm reading a book now. One of my favorite authors, that I read for pleasure, is Ellie Griffiths. Thank you to Jason, my station manager's mom, Pat McMullen, for showing me Ellie Griffiths. And I'm reading the Ruth Galloway books. Anyway, one of the things is that Ruth Galloway in the book had a baby. And she has a friend named Cathbod. That's his chosen name. His name and his born name is Michael. But anyway, she's a friend named Cathbod, who's very holistically oriented and spiritual, and naturally spiritual and stuff. However, he was at a party at Kate at the baby's birthday party, Kate, And he was really lovely and entertaining to the children. He played with them and played games with them and sang to them and did all kinds of great things to them. And he was very wild and happy and energetic. And Ruth said to him, "I think you're high on E numbers." And I'm like, what the heck? And so this is a fun book to read because it's a British book. It's written by a British author and it's a British book. And there's some British dialect that I don't know. I have to look things up and learn what they are. So E numbers are enumerated chemicals stated by Great Britain. And they're, you know, additives and preservatives. So that's when you say somebody's, watch your E numbers, or that food has a lot of E numbers in it, that it's a British thing. So in Great Britain, that's what they're talking about. So it was kind of cool that I learned about it. "So the research is hard to do," said Marion Nestle, who questioned about how Kennedy would ban the chemicals. "You can't do it in people. You can't do the research in people. You can't take a bunch of kids and give them food dyes and another bunch of kids and not and see what happens." Great point. There's evidence that some kids do respond badly to color dyes. Even so, it may be harder for food companies. So I think the way to do it, if you're going to do a study like that, what you need to do, you can't do that kind of study. You can't do a double-blind study or a study where you intentionally give children chemicals. What you need to do is find parents who already are feeding their children things with chemical dyes in them and interview them about their behavior, and then go ahead and put them on a diet that excludes those chemicals and see if their behaviors change. That's a humane way of doing the study, because you can't, if the kids are already eating it and already getting the stuff, then you can talk to the parents about what's going on with the kids and then take the stuff away, which is humane and can only, it will either be null or improve what's going on with them. And then, you know, then you can quantify that study that way. So let's see what they say. "It can be harder for food companies to defend the use of the chemicals because they don't preserve food or provide a nutritional benefit." So in this case, we're not talking about preservatives, we're talking about colors. Colors just make the food look nice or look appealing. And you know, there are ways to make food look appealing without using artificial colors. I get jelly beans from the Willy Food Co-op, and they're entirely colored with fruit and vegetables. And they're not as vibrant and wild colored as, something you get from the grocery store. Or is that famous jelly bean company that has the little tiny jelly beans in all different flavors? Well, you can get a similar jelly bean to that that's organic and has all natural coloring. And so the colors, there's not as much variety in the coloring. But you can get really nice pink and green and yellow. You can get yellow from annatto and turmeric. You can get green from spirulina. You can get reds from beets. So there are healthy things that can color compounds. If you get a bright red treat that's from the health food store, it's going to be colored with beet juice, which is good for you, unless you're sensitive to beets. And the green, it might be colored by spirulina or another green plant. Yellow would often be annatto or turmeric. Turmeric, maybe not turmeric, because turmeric has a taste to it. And if you don't want the jelly bean to taste like turmeric, the annatto doesn't really taste like anything. And then white ones, you know, there's powders that you can use that are non-toxic. So in the food industry, Sarah Gallo, who's a senior vice president of product policy for Consumer Brands Association, which is an industry trade group, said food and beverage makers are committed to food safety and criticize the state-by-state approach, because if there's a patchwork approach in the food regulation space, there could be unnecessary confusion for consumers and limits access to everyday goods and increased costs at the grocery store. So her thought is that it should be nationwide. A researcher at Harvard doesn't buy arguments from some food companies about the potentially high cost of transitioning away from synthetic dyes, noting that companies have managed to find natural color additives to replace them in other countries where synthetic ones are banned. So Mary Nestle says that some companies tried to eliminate artificial dyes from products in the past, but wasn't successful. Mars in 2016. They make a lot of candy bars. Said they were going to remove artificial dyes from all its products, but abandoned the pledge in 2021, who found that consumer expectation regarding colors in food differ widely across markets and categories. So just so you know, Mars is who makes M&Ms. So M&Ms are funny colors. And I'm just going to tell you, if you're concerned about the dyes that are in M&Ms, I think the most toxic dyes are not in M&Ms. They don't have red 40 and they don't have yellow 5, but they do have artificial colors in them. And if you like that kind of treat, that's a chocolate-covered hard candy shell snack, you can get those from the health food store. There's a few brands of those that you can get, and they have a hard candy shell, and the colorings, once again, are all natural. And they managed to make them very pretty. They're very pretty rainbow colors. They're not exactly as bright as M&M's, but they're still really good, and they have more natural chocolate. There's less bad ingredients in the chocolate. So you definitely can get an M&M-like treat from the health food store, a hard candy shell with chocolate inside that doesn't have the coloring in it. There in this article, they talk about a mom, Wendy Bakos, from Florida, who transitioned her children, who were 7 and 3 years old, away from artificial dyes. And she was concerned about health issues from the dyes, and she joined a Facebook group of families who made the transition. The most challenging part was finding dye-free candy that her children like, particularly one of the kids. They found alternatives. There's a few brands. There's Sunspire. There's Unreal. And Unreal, I believe, has those alternative, hard candy shell chocolates, and so does Sunspire. And Trader Joe's has them as well. So we weren't really eating too much like Fruit Loops, but with candy like on Halloween, it was like, why can't I eat that? But when they introduced alternatives, she was okay. The kid was okay with it. So another mom from Humboldt, Iowa, didn't find a lot of issues when she stopped buying foods with dyes for her two little kids, and they've been dye-free since 2021. And she sends her children to school with dye-free candy suckers and fruit snacks, and keeps a box of juice and popsicles. And there's a picture here of foods that don't have artificial colors. One of them is that big company that makes the jelly beans. So I wonder about that. I would have to look. I have to look at that and see. I think that company, the Great Big Jelly Bean Company, I think, I don't know if they have artificial colors, if they have artificial flavors, but the ones at the co-op definitely don't. So when they're at special events, like a theme park or fair, if they go to Disney, they bring their own food. And everyone else can have the snow cone, their kids can't have it, or the cotton candy, or cookies or ice cream. Because the thing is, it's worth it. If the kid is going to be happier and healthier, making these changes is worth it. And if you teach children at a young age that if you eat this, you're going to feel good. Some children are really smart. They know the difference between how they feel when they eat candy with artificial dyes in it and how they feel when they eat something from the health food store. That they know they feel better, that they feel bad when they eat the other stuff, and they feel better when they don't, or if they have an alternative. So some kids will self-regulate that way. Some will and some won't. So here is an article about food dyes and ADHD from, there is a magazine, just so you know, it's called Attitude with 2 D's, the ADD for attention deficit disorder, ADD. So there is research that suggests, they don't say it definitely says, but it suggests that the thing is that you can't say it definitely does or doesn't because of biochemical individuality. Everybody is different. So one person may not react at all noticeably to the chemicals, and another person might. And so that's why these studies are hard to do, because not everybody's going to react the same way to the chemicals, and you're not going to see as big differences between a person with the chemicals, eating the chemicals versus when they're not. So, and then some people you are. And so that's why you have to do the bigger study and do it that way. So again, you can't by right give people something that you think may harm them. After that, take that away and give them something that you think won't. So What you have to do is you basically have to find people who are already eating the stuff, interview them, see what their symptoms are, categorize and catalog those symptoms, and then take them off and see if those things change. And then you have to believe them. You have to believe that they're credible, that they're telling the truth with the changes. So that's why these studies are hard to do. So on January 15, 2025, the FDA banned the use of red dye number 3 in food and ingested drugs. And red dye number 3 has been linked to cancer. Food manufacturers will have until January 2027 to remove red dye number 3, and drug makers until January 2028. It's interesting. So your kid's body is an amazing chemical factory. It transforms raw materials in the food they eat, amino acids, fatty acids, vitamins, minerals, oxygen, sugar, and water, and produces over 100,000 chemicals that wind up as neurotransmitters, brain cells, and so much more in the body. Food is especially important for children with ADHD, attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder, for whom the wrong chemicals and additives, like red dye 40, can spell system failure. So ADHD and artificial food coloring. So there's a mom who served breakfast for her 6-year-old who has ADHD. She didn't know that she was giving him a blueberry muffin, some Fruit Loops, and Sunny D citrus punch would worsen the ADHD symptoms all day long, making him more inattentive and fidgety. And she found that it wasn't the food allergy or the food's too high sugar content, but a common sensitivity to the rainbow of artificial colors in the food that seemed to cause her son's distracted mind. There are studies that were published in The Lancet Pediatrics and the Journal of Pediatrics that suggest the food additives adversely affect a population of children with ADHD. Some indicate that artificial coloring and flavors, as well as the preservative sodium benzoate, which is a mold inhibitor, can even make some kids without diagnosed ADHD hyperactive, and maybe you too. So, two studies from the United Kingdom are good examples. In 2004, one studied healthy preschoolers after giving them either a placebo or 20 milligrams of artificial dye mix plus sodium benzoate. So they did the thing where they gave them the toxin. They found that when the children received the actual dye and sodium benzoate, they had a significant increase in hyperactivity. And then in the second, in 2007, a research team led by UK researcher Donna McCann studied a group of 3-year-olds and 8 or 9 years olds and found that both hyperactive and non-hyperactive children experienced increased hyperactivity scores when given artificial food colors and additives, suggesting the dyes are a general public health concern. So starting in 2010, the European Union required warning labels on all foods that contain artificial dyes may have adverse effects on activity and attention in children. I don't know if we have any labeling like that in the U.S. So the Center for Science in the Public Interest petitioned the Food and Drug Administration to hold a hearing on whether the U.S. should require a similar warning label or ban artificial colors altogether. In the end, the vote established that labels should not be added and the food dye was deemed safe. What can I say? However, the FDA did admit that a population of children does react adversely to these dyes, and the Center for Science and Public Interest has an informative website with more information. So you can go to that website and look at it, and it's called Food Dyes, A Rainbow of Risks. If you consume orange soda in the U.S., you're consuming red number 40 and yellow number 5. But in Britain, you're drinking pumpkin and carrot extract, which are actually good for you and is going to give you carotenoids and antioxidants. Strawberry Nutrigrain bars. Oh, I am exhausted. Have artificial food dye in the U.S., but natural in Britain. Ugh! McDonald's strawberry sundaes are colored with red number 40 in the U.S. British consumers get, guess what? Strawberries. Ugh! So things are changing with U.S. food manufacturers. In early 2015, Nestle announced that it will remove all artificial food dyes from its candies. A couple days later, Hershey said its labels would have simpler ingredients that are easy to understand, whatever that means. Kraft has committed to removing all yellow dyes from its mac and cheese. Taco Bell and Panera have committed to stop using artificial colors and high fructose corn syrup, and General Mills is already removing dyes from some of its cereals. How do you know if a food additive is compromising your child's focus? So check out, do a quick test at home for 1 week. Avoid foods and drinks that contain the following U.S. certified colors. Red number 40, blue number 2, yellow number 5, also known as tartrazine, yellow number 6, sunset yellow, as well as sodium benzoate. When you take those out, is your kid less fidgety? Are they less prone to meltdowns? Are they less impulsive and hyperactive? After 7 days, reintroduce the food additives into the ADHD food plan by squeezing a few drops of artificial food coloring. You know, you can get those little bottles in the baking section and squeeze, and those have, make sure they have the fake colorings in them. Have the child drink it. Observe their behavior for 2 or 3 hours. If you don't see it change, have him have another glass and see if he becomes more hyperactive. So you can do elimination diets for ADHD. When the British researchers tested the food dyes and preservatives, 79% of the children tested and reacted to the food dyes. 73% reacted to soy, 64% reacted to milk, and 59% reacted to chocolate. Now, chocolate, the thing is, chocolate is not chocolate, because there's a lot of, when you take chocolate candy can vary so much among what it is. So, I mean, if you're going to test chocolate per se, you have to give them, you have to see how they react with a conventional chocolate they might eat every day from the candy store or from, you know, the convenience store versus a really high quality chocolate that has nothing but, like I get a chocolate brand that has, the chocolate is ground cacao and evaporated cane juice, and that's all it is. So you're probably going to respond to that differently than you would from, you know, a bar from the convenience store. So chocolate, because I, you know how I feel about cacao. Cacao is amazing. Cacao is a wonderful antioxidant. Not everybody's going to react well to cacao, but chocolate, depending on what's in it, could be a problem. So when these kids were placed on a special elimination diet that excluded foods that trigger unwanted behavior, as many as 30% of the toddlers and preschoolers benefit, which is not nothing. So Eugene Arnold stated this in A Family's Guide to Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And the benefits for adults with ADHD are less clear because we're mellower to start with, and if we are feeling weird, we're not as likely to act out. On an elimination diet, you start by eliminating dairy, chocolate and cocoa, wheat, rye, barley, eggs, processed meats, nuts, and citrus. Instead, your child only eats foods unlikely to cause reactions. So this is a basic elimination diet from Aditude. Lamb, chicken, potato, rice, banana, apples, cucumber, celery, carrots, parsnips, cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, salt, pepper, and vitamin supplements, preferably ones that don't have added foods and colorings. This is more limited than I would like to see. There's many, many more vegetables that could be on an elimination diet. You could throw quinoa and amaranth in there. I guess they're taking them off nuts and seeds. But there's so many more vegetables they could be eating. There's summer and winter squash. I don't think squash is on here. If they do well with onions and garlic, they could do that. And like I said, for grains, they could be doing quinoa and amaranth and probably buckwheat as well, because those are all gluten-free pseudo grains, and those are probably fine. Then you restore other foods one at a time to see whether they cause a reaction. If nothing happens in 2 weeks, if you see no difference in your child's behavior, even when they're eating the restricted diet, you can stop the experiment. If you notice an improvement, reintroduce one excluded food each day and watch what happens. Well, I think when you're doing an elimination diet and you're reintroducing foods, what you really should do, I don't think you should do it one day at a time because you need some time to observe the reaction. So I like to look at least 3 days. You put in a food that, put in a suspect food, a food that's on the list, let the kid eat it for until they react or for 3 days. And if they react, of course, pull the food right away. Let the reaction clear before you add something else. So say day one that you give them some cheese and they immediately have a reaction to the cheese. They get hyperactive or get sleepy or they get a bad tummy or whatever it is. Okay, no more cheese. And you don't add a new food until the reaction to that cheese has passed, and then you add the next food. If you give them the cheese and they're perfectly fine, then let them eat the cheese for 3 days, and after 3 days, then go on to the next one, say gluten, you know, some kind of bread or cookie or something. And then again, 3 days or until they have a reaction. And if they do have a reaction, let the reaction clear before you add something else in. Because then you have to do that, because otherwise you don't know what's going on. So if you have a bad reaction, of course, you're going to eliminate that food. And if it's something the kid really likes, you could try reintroducing it a year later. When not repeatedly exposed to a trigger food, a kid may outgrow the sensitivities. And sometimes you can eat the food, so you may not see a reaction to a food until 3 days out. And if so, you stop the food, wait for the reaction to go away, then you might try it again, give it to the kid for only 1 day. If they have no reaction, then maybe you don't. The kid can do a rotation diet, and they can eat that food perhaps every 2 to 3 days or a couple times a week. So here's Feingold. Remember I said the Feingold diet. So in the 70s, Benjamin Feingold, who was a pediatrician and allergist at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in San Francisco, introduced an eating plan that he said could help alleviate symptoms of ADHD, which is the Feingold diet. It forbids artificial food colors, flavorings, sweeteners, and preservatives, as well as some salicylates, naturally occurring compounds in some fruits and vegetables. However, it was studied and it didn't uphold Feingold's claims when he first made them, and most ADHD experts still dismiss the Feingold diet as ineffective. Yet some recent research suggests that Feingold diet may indeed benefit the small percentage of children in ADHD who seem sensitive to chemicals and food. Well, here's the thing though, right? So you're doing this diet where you're eliminating colors and flavor, you know, artificial colors, artificial flavors, artificial sweeteners, all these bad things. So what are you then putting into the diet? Now you have to put all natural foods into the diet. So the thing is, you're generally going to have a good result. And again, you're not going to see a profound reaction in every kid because of biochemical individuality. If a child has a much faster metabolic system, then you might throw some M&Ms at them and they might be fine if you give them M&Ms, you know, once a week. On the other hand, if somebody has a slower metabolism or they're very sensitive or they have a diagnosis of ADHD, and if you have a diagnosis of ADHD, there's probably some genetic basis to that. They have some kind of a methylation issue. They have some genes that convert via a bunch of B vitamins a little bit slower, so they don't detoxify as well. So their nervous system doesn't function the same way. So people differ in how they metabolize. So they're going to differ in how they metabolize toxins. And they might, somebody who has a very high metabolism and doesn't have a methylation defect, that stuff's going to get out of their body much quicker than somebody who does. So then if you take those chemicals out of the food, presumably you're replacing it with really great food. So you're not just taking the stuff out, you're putting in way more nutritious food. Honestly, whether you see a difference in the behavior or not, it's worth doing. It's worth eating healthy food. I can't believe I have to say this. Eating a diet that's high in natural foods, that clean protein, fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds if you tolerate them. If you can tolerate dairy, you want the dairy to be clean. You want it to be from grass-fed animals. That is, if you can tolerate it. It is really common for people to not be able to tolerate dairy. And then not tolerating wheat or gluten, unless the person has antibodies to the wheat or gluten, which is a good thing to test for. You don't always know if the problem with the wheat or gluten is the fact that they're eating hybridized American wheat that also has chemicals in it. And those chemicals can be causing the problem. So there could be glyphosate pesticide. There could be dough conditioners. There can be bleaches in them. There can be bromine in them, like bleaches. Bromine is one of the bleaches. So it could be the way that the wheat is hybridized, because there are people who eat wheat that was produced in America and then they go to Italy or they go overseas somewhere in Europe or somewhere even in Asia or Africa, and they eat the wheat there and they're fine. And they come back to the U.S. and they eat the wheat and it's no good again. And it has to do with the way the wheat is grown and or processed. It could be either or both. So So it does require a lot of meal planning to take care of people with ADHD, but it's, if you can do it, it's worth doing. Then there's the sugar debate around ADHD. 84% of 302 parents in a 2003 study believe that sugar has a negative effect on the kids' behavior, and many adults with ADHD are convinced that sugar worsens their symptoms as well. But medical experts tend to discount any link between behavior and sugar or artificial sweeteners. That doesn't make sense to me. I can see where maybe sugar doesn't affect behavior so much, but artificial sweeteners, you can't put them in the same boat. I mean, sugar is something your body knows how to metabolize, even if it's refined. Whereas an artificial sweetener is a chemical, and some of those chemicals, your body just doesn't have the apparatus. We weren't designed to metabolize sucralose. We weren't designed to metabolize saccharin or cyclamates or other artificial sweeteners. So we were designed to metabolize glucose. But this is interesting that they tend to discount artificial or sweeteners in general. There were decades-old studies that were in the New England Journal of Medicine. Effects of diets high in aspartame on the behavior and cognitive performance of you can't put sucrose and aspartame in the same boat, really. Even when intake exceeds typical dietary levels, neither dietary sucrose nor aspartame affects children's behavior or cognitive function. So again, the results in whatever study they did were too subtle for them to note a difference. It's interesting. The study from 1995, the effect of sugar on behavior or cognition in children, reached that conclusion. And the possibility that sugar might have a mild effect on certain children couldn't be ruled out, but they couldn't say for sure. Sugar does carry a lot of calories and has no nutritional value. People who eat a lot of sweets may be missing out on essential nutrients, but that might keep them calm and focused. And since ADHD medications tend to blunt the appetite, it's important to make every calorie healthy and nutritious. Sugar is neither of these things. So one of the problems with refined sugar is when you eat carbohydrates, if you eat a whole grain, so say you eat quinoa, which is really a pseudo grain, or you eat whole healthy wheat like einkorn or emmer, and it's got its bran in it. In the bran are B vitamins and minerals like magnesium that help you to metabolize the carbohydrate in it. So it's a complete package. When you eat refined carbohydrates, such as white sugar, well, you've got, first of all, if you've got eating white sugar, you've got bleaches in there. There are things that condition the sugar for it to be this white sugar. You still need the B vitamins and magnesium to metabolize the sugar, but they're not present. So it's going to leave you at a deficit. So, B vitamins and magnesium are important for all kinds of things. They're cofactors for detoxification in your liver. They help with neurological function. They help with the actual function of the nerves themselves, as well as the metabolism of neurotransmitters. And so if you eat a lot of refined sugar, you're probably going to have some mood issues because you're not going to be able to manage your serotonin, norepinephrine, and dopamine as well, because you need those B vitamins and magnesium to help to metabolize those neurotransmitters. Refined sugar, I think it definitely can affect mood. The other thing that they don't talk about here is that if you eat a lot of refined sugar, it's going to affect your there's no mention so far in these articles about the microbiome. Microbiome is going to be affected by artificial coloring, sweeteners, flavorings. When you consume artificial items, they're going to go right through you. You're probably not going to be able to metabolize them well. So what's going to happen is they're going to get into your gut. And remember that your colon is called a colon because it is a colony of lots and lots of microorganisms. And microorganisms aren't picky. If you send something down there, they're going to try to eat it. So some people get gas and bloating, and I tell them, all right, get off all your artificial stuff. Don't even worry about wheat or gluten or anything. Just eat organic wheat and eat, grass-fed dairy. Just get off all the chemicals. Don't eat the M&Ms. Don't eat the Fruit Loops. Don't eat anything with an artificial anything in it and see what happens. And a lot of times their digestive problems go away because they're getting dysbiosis. I had a patient recently who came in and she got off refined sugar. She was eating something that was a natural, It was a packaged product, but it had a lot of sugar in it. She stopped consuming that sugar, and she was drinking a processed a chai concentrate and had a lot of sugar in it. So she stopped that, and she started consuming, started using tea bags. She drank lots of different kinds of tea, including chai tea bags, and had a little splash of alternative milk in it. And she was not able to do honey, but she was able to do maple syrup. Got all better. So when you eat refined sugar, you're going to get some dysbiosis. You're going to increase fungal production. You're going to increase candida and yeasts in your digestive system. And you're going to increase the proportion of unfriendly microorganisms. And those unfriendly microorganisms, they do things like deconjugate. So you have hormones going through and you have other environmental chemicals going through that have been conjugated. That means in the liver, they have a hydroxyl group added to them, which makes them water soluble, which makes them dissolve in bile and therefore able to be carried out through the colon through excretion. So when you have poor quality bacteria in there, like pathogens, some of them have beta-glucuronidase and they will deglucuronidate your compound. So if it's been labeled with glucuronic acid, it's going to break that bond and you start reabsorbing those hormones and chemicals into your body. Likewise, things can be deconjugated by microorganisms. Something that's been conjugated is now water soluble and able to be excreted, and the unfriendly bacteria can deconjugate them and then out it comes. And then you have microorganisms that see these unfamiliar compounds and you haven't digested them. So like, you can eat that? No, I'll eat it then. And so you get a lot of gas and bloating from that. And they make weirdo gases from metabolizing these things. And then you get digestive upset. So it's not just about, so when you eat refined sugar, there's a number of mechanisms by which it affects your mood. And one of them is that it depletes you of essential minerals and vitamins like B vitamins and magnesium. And it also causes dysbiosis. It causes disorders in your gut flora. And we know that friendly gut flora, actually make vitamins for you and neurotransmitters. And you're not going to have as much of those if you're eating a lot of refined sugar, because the bad guys are going to outcompete them for resources. There was a recent review of studies on diet and ADHD that was conducted in 2014. There were mixed outcomes. The science is still shaky in that area. Studies found parents often reported behavior changes with consumption of artificial food colors and additives, but teachers and clinical tests didn't report the same level of change. So the conclusion there was that artificial colors do react adversely with ADHD symptoms in some children. The studies on sugar and artificial colors had negligible results, which thwart the theory that sugar and artificial sweeteners cause ADHD symptoms. Again, biochemical individuality, you can't 100% rely on these studies. And if you want my opinion, I think this is going to shock you. Eating a diet that's full of natural foods without artificial chemicals in it is going to make you and your family and your children feel better, behave better, and just have a better life. Not rocket science here. So any sweetener, including artificial ones, disrupts dopamine and dopamine receptors in the brain, which can lead to alterations in behavior, binge eating, and ADHD symptoms. So when you eat a lot of sugar, it causes a cycle of eating a lot of sugar. So a 12-ounce can of soda contains almost 10 teaspoons of sugar, which is a bad idea for a child of any age, even 95. Most healthcare practitioners recommend gently reducing sugar for better health and behavior, and try satisfying sugar cravings with fruit, but avoid high fructose corn syrup. You can use small amounts of alternative natural sweeteners like monk fruit, stevia, xylitol. Keep the xylitol away from the dogs. It is toxic to dogs. So if you find your child has food sensitivities, you can wean him or her off of foods that are artificially dyed and flavored and contain sodium benzoate. Do 100% fruit juice and dilute it. There are soft drinks that are basically just juice and fizzy water. So you can find those at your health food store, and they're generally not the nationally known brands, but you can find those. There are fruit spritzers that have very few calories in them. That's just a splash of fruit juice and water. If you have time to bake, learn to bake stuff. And let me tell you, I got into baking in the last few months, and I find that it's not that hard to do. You can find all kinds of recipes online and use whatever ingredients that you want. If you want to flavor them, you can get natural flavoring that you get from the grocery store or from the health food store. You can get all natural products. You can get all natural cereals that don't have colorings and artificial flavorings in them. There are even supermarket brands that don't have flavorings, like Cheerios, for example. And so if your kids like barbecue sauce, read the label before buying and make sure they don't have red number 40 in it. Just check it. This is a good time to check your labels. And Jell-O and other gelatin mixes have artificial coloring and flavors. You can make your own gelatin salad and dessert by dissolving plain gelatin in 100% fruit juice. So that's a way to do. And you probably can get holistically oriented gelatin from the health food store. Pediatric medicines are often artificially colored and flavored, which is nuts to me. Ask your doctor for an additive-free substitute that will work just as well. For over-the-counter stuff like ibuprofen and acetaminophen, which do come in dye-free white tablets and adjust for your child's age. You can get antihistamines that are also, you think an antihistamine. Antihistamines for an allergic reaction. You would think that that would only come allergen-free, but no, you have to get all-natural diphenhydramine. So that's a good idea to find that. So avoiding foods with artificial colors and preservatives has another big benefit. It raises the nutritional value, I already said that, of your family's diet, since the junkiest foods on the shelves tend to be the most heavily colored and flavored. So next week we'll talk about why sugar is, this is a great article, it's why sugar is kryptonite for ADHD brains. I'm curious about that. But I have run out of time, so I'm going to let you go. So that was a very interesting talk, wasn't it, about food dyes and colorings and ADHD. Okay, so you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, MD, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, MD, for 30 days after recording. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath. We're your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.